Prabhupada by his language, Shri Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. Shesh Kardama, husband of the great Devahuti, was manifested from the shadow of Brahma. Thus all became manifested from either the body or the mind of Brahma. Purport. Although one of the three modes of material nature is always prominent, they are never represented unalloyed by one another. Even in the most prominent existence of the two lower qualities, the modes of passion and ignorance, there is sometimes a tinge of the mode of goodness. Therefore, all the sons generated from the body or the mind of Brahma were in the modes of passion and ignorance. But some of them, like Kardama, were born in the mode of goodness. Narada was born in the transcendental state of Brahma. So I'm in no means qualified to sit here. I simply here for my own purification, but seeking the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, particularly senior godbrothers. Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto, the very first chapter of the Bhagavatam. The first canto of the Bhagavatam is dealing with one's adhikar, one's qualification, the qualifications of the speaker of the Bhagavatam, qualifications of the hearer of Bhagavatam, on many levels. So Vyasadeva, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, Srila Sutta Goswami, the sage of Naimisira, all their qualifications is explained in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but also our qualification bit in the Bhagavatam. It's made clear, and in the very first chapter, I think one of the first verses, verse 5, Prabhupada writes that the Goswamis never speak on Bhagavatam capriciously. I don't know what the word capricious means. I had to Google it.
Yeah. Capricious. To those who are not qualified.
Capricious means easily changing one's mind. Yeah. Whimsical, basically on the mental platform. Wanting to do this and wanting to do that, changing a lot. Very interesting, very first qualification. Probably, I think this is text 5, the first verse, first chapter, Prabhupada says, one should never speak capriciously on the Bhagavatam. So that's sort of my current meditation when we approach Bhagavatam, that this realization means to not to try and supersede previous acharyas. It means to realize what they said and simply present it in a way which is understandable and applicable for the current audience, which requires actually great intense knowledge of the Shastra and requires intense humility, but to think that you know better than the previous acharyas. So I'm trying to take this mood to heart. We should be humble when speaking about it all. So again, seeking your kind prayers. Here we're in the middle of the third canto, and we're dealing with Lord Brahma and his creation. He's currently third time lucky. The first time trying to progeny everything, Kumara's come. Too much mode of goodness. They don't want to bother procreating. So he tries again. Shambhu, Rudra, Lord Shiva comes, but too much mode of ignorance. Doesn't work. So third time lucky, and he's creating all these different sages from different aspects of his body for the purpose of procreation. And here we hear about the creation of sage Kardama, Kardama Muni. And it's interesting, although he's born from the shadow of Brahma, the shadow is often considered the dark part. Even described the Maya as the shadow of Krishna. But nonetheless, he's situated in the world of goodness. So I thought what we could discuss today is look at the life of Kardama Muni, and particularly emphasizing how it is that he is situated in the world of goodness, and what lessons we can learn from that. Because if we look at Bhagavatam, there's many, many stories of exalted personalities, but sometimes there may be somewhat, we hear their stories, but maybe we don't feel so encouraged, we feel so far beyond our level. Narada Muni is 5 years old and his mother dies. He thinks, okay, this is great, now I can just fully dedicate myself to the Supreme Lord. It may not be so relatable. If we're 5 years old, that happens to us, we become more emotionally traumatized. Or Parikshit Maharaj, he can simply learn that you're going to die in 7 days. He sees this as a blessing to completely get rid of all material attachments. So this is what we're striving for, this level of sincerity, there's a level of pure devotional service, but we also have to be realistic. So it's very nice. Bhagavatam is presenting devotees at many, many different levels. Kardama Muni, he's situated in the mode of goodness. He's not necessarily a pure devotee. But as we'll discover as we look at his life, he lives his life in such a perfect way that he becomes a pure devotee by being situated in the mode of goodness. So Kardama Muni, he's instructed by Lord Brahma to progenate. And in order to undertake this task, he decides to sit by the river Saraswati and perform penance for 10,000 years. After performing this penance, he gets darshan of the Lord. This is the perfection of any sort of form of yoga or meditation, is to actually to see the Lord. And he becomes overwhelmed in ecstasy as Lord Vishnu appears on the back of Garuda. And he prays to Lord Vishnu, saying that now the perfection of my eyes has been achieved, now that I've seen you. And the Bhagavatam gives such a beautiful description of the Lord there, with white lotus flower garland, with black curls of hair. It's very, 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 very poetic. And Kardama Muni is praying that now the perfection of my life has been achieved, that I've seen you. He says that those great personalities who are seeking to cross over this material world, simply they take shelter at your lotus feet. Your feet are the vessel by which one can easily cross over this material world. It is only a fool would approach you looking for some material gain. And this message is repeated multiple places in Bhagavatam. Lord Rishabh famously says to his sons, Nam deho deho bhajami roke kastan kam ahate vid bhajami, that the pleasure which is found in trying to gratify the senses, although one in the human form of life may be more refined than their gratification, this actual pleasure of interacting a sense object with the senses that can be found in any species of life. Even the hogs and the dogs also enjoy such a sense pleasure. And we may feel that we're more refined in our fancy eating and fancy apartments, but nonetheless, the happiness actually which is experienced from as Prabhupada say, from the hog eating stool, the happiness they're experiencing is the same. So therefore, one who's actually intelligent should never eat at eyes. Any spiritual form of life, to try and get some material gain. Again, the first canto of the Bhagavatam reiterates this point repeatedly. Kamalabhaya Hishmadaha. That one, all these activities, if one simply is trying to gratify the senses by their activities, then Shrama Eva Hikevalam, or simply engaged in useless labour. So Kardama Muni is making these points to the Supreme Lord. But then he says, but I am one of these less intelligent people, because actually I have done all this austerity, but actually I have some desire, that I have a desire for a wife. And Lord Vishnu doesn't get angry. He doesn't get disappointed. No, actually he becomes even more affectionate. And he smiles very affectionately at Kardama Muni. He says, I know this already. I'm situated in your heart. But the purpose of prayer is that we become personal with the Lord. Krishna knows everything that's happening, all our desires. He knows it all perfectly, but prayer has to be an essential part of our life because it focuses our desires so we know them for ourselves as well. And so the Supreme Lord, Lord Vishnu, he says to him, I've already arranged for you to get the most wonderful wife in the universe. Prabhupada writes that one approaches the Supreme Lord, he will never be frustrated. And so Lord Vishnu says, within a couple of days, Swayambhuvaman, the emperor of the entire universe, he'll be touring his kingdom with his wife and his daughter. And his daughter will be suitable for you for marriage. And Lord Vishnu assures him, but you'll never be overcome by the material influence, and in the end you will perfect your life, and even I myself will appear as your son. So the first lesson we can learn from here regarding the mode of goodness is how Kardama Muni, he has self-honesty. He's not someone trying to artificially pretend he doesn't have desires, because such activity, when we don't properly address desires that we have, These are symptoms of the modes of passion and ignorance. The mode of ignorance simply causing harm to everyone, also to herself. The mode of passion is we're doing the right action but for the wrong reason. So we may try and live a life of renunciation, but not because of necessarily purity of heart, but because we want some of the benefits which come along from such a life of renunciation. But without facing our internal desires, then ultimately we cannot sustain. Lord Brahma, he's situated in the mode of passion. Lord Shiva is in control of the mode of ignorance. But maintenance of this universe is undertaken by Lord Vishnu in the mode of goodness. And everyone knows maintenance is by far the hardest. Destroying something is very easy. Building something is fun. So there's some difficulty there, but you can put up with the difficulty because also it's not it's some short time frame. But to maintain something, this is the hardest. And same with our spiritual life. You can destroy your spiritual life very, very easily. It takes a bit more effort to begin your spiritual life, but there's some excitement to learn lots of new things. You feel some rapid change, but to maintain your spiritual life, that's where the difficulty comes. And that's why one must be situated in the mode of goodness. And so Cardinal Mini, he understands that he does have desire for family life. He has some desire for world enjoyment, and therefore he engages in desire in an immensely healthy way. He approaches the Lord. And as we see from his life, when we look at the story, he perfects his life. The desire is not an impediment. It's how you deal with the desire which is the impediment. So as promised by the Lord, so the Lord, he leaves after giving his benediction to Cardinal Muni. And Cardinal was left standing on the bank of the Saraswati, and all he can hear is the Samaveda being, as Garuda flaps his wings, the Samaveda river breath. And he waits there, exactly as the Lord says. 2 days later, Swayam Bhuvamanu appears with his wife and their daughter. And Swayam Bhuvamanu, he's not heard anything from Vishnu, but they've got their own plan, but actually all being organized by the Lord. And he goes and he sees the sage, and he sees that, of course, this sage, he has matted hair, deer skin. He's not looking particularly presentable for his daughter, who's a princess. But you can see that this is an unpolished gem that he's actually glowing with such tejas. Prabhupada writes in that purport, actually, that the brahmachari should look healthy and lustrous. For one who wants to advance in spiritual life, interesting purport. And so he approaches Cardinal Muni. And he offers the respect, because although Swami Bhuvamanu is the emperor of the entire world, he understands that the Brahmana is my spiritual master. So he offers the respect to him. This is a penniless sage. And Cardinal Muni, he also has immense appreciation for Swami Bhuvamanu. He's not sitting there simply just, yes, you respect me. Actually, he then offers his respect in return to Swami Bhuvamanu. And he says to him, it's only because of your service, the way you're looking after this entire universe, that you're cutting out all rascals, all thieves, criminals. It's only because of your leadership that I can actually engage in my penance and austerity in the study of the Shastra. And simultaneously, Swami Bhuvamanu starts glorifying him. He says, well, unless I get darshan of such sages like yourself, then my life is completely lost. Only by your guidance can I understand where I'm going. So they very nicely appreciate each other. It's very beautiful, actually. And then even Swayam Bhuvamanu, he says that actually the Supreme Lord, he protects both of us through each other. That the Brahmanas protect the Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas protect the Brahmanas. And the second point we can learn here about the mode of goodness is the mode of goodness means appreciation, mutual appreciation. And so in this Jayavaita Maharaj, we did refer to the society as a mutual appreciation society. And actually, this is a symptom of one who wants to advance in spiritual life, is that we can appreciate the service of others. If we cannot appreciate the service of others, it means we're still very much on the neophyte platforms of devotional service, because simply we are the center. I am the one. I wonder what he explained in I relate to this quite a lot, is that initially when I joined, I thought these guys are very, very lucky to have me. The service I'm doing is revolutionary. But over time I realised much that I'm very lucky to be allowed to be in the association of such exalted Vaishnavas. And all Vaishnavas are exalted. We have to come to that level. I've seen all Vaishnavas exalted. At the Jamashtami festival, we had a nice conversation with a group of devotees with His Grace Kartik Chandra Prabhu. And he was sharing one pastime from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Brahmacharis had approached Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and asked him for some advice, I think, on how to live in community. It's often a question which comes up, how to actually live in association of devotees. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, he said, associate with each other in good measure. So they were a little bit confused. What does this mean? So after asking other senior god brothers, they got encouraged to go and speak to Prabhupada again. And he said, very simple, not too much, not too little. If you associate too much without nourishing your own spiritual life, it means you become unhealthily dependent upon another. They're simply, I see these devotees are my friends, I feel happy being with them simply as friends. But if they were to leave or move country or move ashram, then that would completely destabilize my spiritual life. And this is a somewhat of an unhealthy, initially it may be there, but we have to move beyond this particular stage. We have to nourish our own internal realization, our own conviction, because change is the one constant of this material world. It's sure to happen. The people we were with, you don't notice it happening because it happens so slowly. But slowly you look around and you realize actually so many people around you are always changing. But if you don't associate enough, then you never learn to appreciate the Vaishnavas. And the spiritual world is a place full of Vaishnava appreciation. One thinks that the service being offered by all these other devotees is so much greater than what I can ever do. And that's the mood of how to actually offer service which is pleasing to Krishna. Even it's described by the topmost devotee of the Lord, Srimati Radharani, she wants to place other devotees towards Krishna, thinking that the service they're doing is so great. So the second lesson we can learn from Kardama Muni about how he is situated in the mode of goodness is that we have to develop a mood of appreciation. It may not be there naturally, but if you serve with devotees and make an effort to serve with different devotees, even devotees who you might not necessarily feel that you want to serve with, then you see that anyone who remains within practicing devotional service, they're taking on austerity. And when you appreciate the austerity someone's taking on, you may not appreciate other aspects of their character, a way they act, or even the outcome of their service, but you appreciate the austerity that they've done for Srila Prabhupada, then you become unified. And your spiritual life also flourishes. So this is the second point. So then Swami Govamanu, he approaches Kardama Muni, and Kardama asks him, my dear king, what can I do for you? And the king, he says, my mind is disturbed. My daughter, she is at a marriageable age, and she's looking for a husband. And she's heard from Narada Muni about your exalted quality, and her mind is fixed upon you. And he doesn't know that Kardama Muni has already requested a wife. So he tries to play the game a little bit, and he says, I've heard you've not taken vows of lifelong renunciation. And moreover, my daughter, she is most highly qualified. You don't get a, you can't come from a more qualified family than Swami Govamanu. Your brother is King Uttanapad and King Priyavrata. So exalted, actually. And he only describes how beautiful she is, just to entice her. He says, even some Gandharvas, they're flying by, and they've seen her on the roof of the building, and they fell from the airplane. Something of beauty know so much. And he says to Gardner Moody, if one rejects an offer which comes of his own accord, then this is not so good. You know, it's better to accept an offer which comes of his own accord than later have to go and beg from a miser, because that will lower your position. And Prabhupada described it, this is the highest type of marriage, is that the father will offer the daughter in charity to a suitable husband. This is the highest type of marriage according to Prabhupada, in the Vedic understanding. So Kardam Muni, he graciously accepts, knowing this to be the plan of the Lord, knowing it. But before he accepts, he contemplates. And again, this is another symptom of the Lord of goodness, is that he understands that will this wife be good for my spiritual life? Because before entering any serious decision in life, word of goodness means to think of the long-term plan. Word of goodness means long-term. Word of passion means what will gratify me now. Word of goodness means what will bring about ultimate happiness for both myself and for my wife. And so he sees that, yes, she's highly qualified. Also, she's attracted to him, he's attracted to her. Therefore, there's a total match. So, the mode of goodness very much means no rash decisions. Hard decisions which you can live with rather than easy decisions you cannot live with. But he makes a condition to Swayambhuvamana. Just as the Lord has told him, he says, yes, I will marry your daughter, but as soon as we come together and she is pregnant, then I will leave. So another symptom of the Guru goodness, Jai Shri Radha Gopalanandaki. Another symptom of the mode of goodness, again, understanding long term, is that one always has an escape plan. This material world is not our home, and therefore we have to have a plan how to escape. To expect to simply receive mercy by accident, perhaps it's like trying to receive a university degree without going to university. Sometimes people get it, sometimes people get an honorary degree, but you cannot sit back, do nothing, expect to get an honorary degree. No, if you want a degree, you should go to university. So this is pragmatism. Spiritual life is pragmatic. Prabhupada, I can't remember who, but one Prabhupada disciple at Vyasapuja, he said Prabhupada, he glorified his transcendental pragmatism. That's a very nice phrase. But Prabhupada exemplified this, that spiritual life is pragmatic. Particularly mode of goodness means to see things as they are, and work out how to actually navigate through the situation. So he says, yes, he knows he's got this desire, he's got this service to progeny, he's got desire for a wife. A beautiful wife is there, the situation is perfect, but he also thinks, okay, I will do this and then I will move on. Because he understands that he has to perfect his life. And Prahlada Maharaj describes family life without any clear progression. It's like a blind well, one becomes more and more blinded by it. So therefore he accepts Devavati. And Swayambhuvamana and his wife, Shatarupa, they depart after giving Devavati and leaving Devavati there. And I find it quite funny. And you think, okay, now's the time for honeymoon, celebration, all these things, but at this stage, Karma, I think he's still in he's got to pass your consciousness, so nothing changes. Before Swayambhuvamana came, he was sitting offering obeisances to the fire. They arrange, he gets given a wife, they leave, and he continues doing these things. And Devahuti, she's so exalted. She's a princess. She's been raised in the most opulent circumstances. But she humbly serves her husband. Describes that her service is very austere because they're living just in a little hermitage, Mankara Sarasvati. And she becomes emaciated. thin and weak from all this service, but she never complains once, because she understands how exalted. Her husband is no ordinary person. Her husband is actually a darshan of the Lord. But then one day, Cardinal Mooney, he sees her serving, and he becomes overwhelmed by compassion. He sees her become skinny, emaciated. And he says to her, my dear wife, that the body of anyone who's embodied in this world is so dear to them. You neglected your body for my sake. And he glorifies her, and he... But he's still in the consciousness of a brahmachari. And he says to her, actually, any benedictions, any grace which I get from all my austerities, from all my penance, may that all be given to you. And Devahuti, she's very grateful, but still naturally she has other plans in mind. And she says to him, you know, my dear husband, I'm your wife, and you're an exalted sage, but I have a desire for children. And even the Supreme Lord, he said that you would have children. So I think it would be best if we could maybe change this way of life a little bit. Because she could understand herself that although she was serving her husband so nicely, still she had this desire. So Cardamuni, he graciously agrees. And Devotee says, well, if we're going to have children, then actually we need a house. This is an ancient material world. Everything likes to expand. So Cardinal Mooney, he's no ordinary person. He's actually, you know, master of all different mystic cities. And therefore he says, no bother. And he immediately manifests, not a house, not a mansion, a castle in the sky, an aerial mansion. There's a whole pages of descriptions of this mansion in the third canto of Bhagavatam. There's courtyards, there's gardens, there's lakes, there's many, many different types of birds, there's intoxicating fragrances, a column made of jewels. It's quite something. Devahuti, she sees this, but she's feeling, and Karavani, he's very sensitive, he understands that when Devahuti sees this, she feels somewhat uncomfortable, because she's still in this emaciated state, she's been performing so much austerity, her hair is all matted. He says, don't worry, you go into town to the lake, Bindusarovar, created from the tears of the Lord. And she goes down there and she gets a complete makeover. And she comes out looking very, very beautiful, and Cardamom, he's very attracted to see her. And they go into the aerial mansion, and they travel through the entire universe. All the highlights they see. This is probably the most fancy honeymoon you could ever describe. You see everything. And then eventually, after travelling all around the universe, Mount Sumeru, different pleasure gardens everywhere, they come back to beside the river Saraswati. And Devahuti has a desire for a child. And for Cardamom, he actually, using the mystic abilities, he expands himself. And they enjoy together. But it's very interesting, as soon as they come together, they unite, and Devahuti becomes pregnant, then after all that enjoyment, all that pleasure, as soon as she's pregnant, and it describes actually immediately, as soon as she's pregnant, she gives birth. I think Cardamom, he has some, he's still using his mystical abilities, maybe just to, didn't want to deal with pregnancy or something. So as soon as she's pregnant, she gives birth, and she gives birth to these nine beautiful daughters. Even describes the smell of their limbs as like a red lotus flower. So Cardamom, he's enjoyed it all this way. Finally, his daughters are here. And as soon as they're here, he's out the door. He said, no, I made my word. I will come, will enjoy it. And as soon as you have a child, then gone. It's a bit extreme, you know? And Devahuti, she's very distraught. Naturally, so she's trying not to be, because she understands her husband is a great sage. But she's at the door as Cardamom is leaving. And she's saying, my husband, you know, you cannot leave me like this. You know, according to Vedic understanding, you know, A woman is always under the care of her husband, of her father, then her husband, and then her son. But who will look after me with no sons? And she's lamenting, she's thinking, I've been with you for so long, but simply we've been enjoying our senses, I've not really taken your saintly association. So Cardinal, he looks back and he feels some duty perhaps. And so he goes to her and he tells her, actually, no, the Supreme Lord, he will descend as your son. And so this is then heralding the appearance of Kapila Dev, the incarnation of the Lord. And then Kapila Dev, he appears. And Kardamuni, he goes to Kapila Dev and says, okay, now can I leave? And Kapila Dev, he gives him blessing that he can leave. And it's very, very interesting because, again, this is another symptom of the mode of goodness. Here the Supreme Lord has come as one's son. And we glorify every day, even before giving class, we're saying, Yashoda Nandana, Brajajana, you know, the Supreme Lord, he's the son of Mother Yashoda, glorifying Mother Yashoda, we're glorifying Nanda Maharaj, we're glorifying all the residents of Vrindavan who have such an intimate relationship with Krishna, they see him as their son. Mother Yashoda, she even chastising him. Mother Yashoda, she's got a stick in her hand and she's going to get Krishna. Krishna, he's looking down, his face is downtrodden and the black ointment around his eyes is being smudged from his tears. And Kunti Devi, she's making this prayer that she's bewildered because fear personified is afraid of Krishna. Krishna's afraid of Mother Yashoda. So always we're hearing these glorifications of Krishna's mother, Krishna's father. There's one verse, I don't know who it's from, Prabhupada wrote this a lot. The other people do all this austerity, meditation, read the Vedas, simply worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Personality of Godhead is playing as a child. And this is our mood. And this is the mood of the Bhagavatam. But here, Cardinal Muni, he gets the Supreme Lord as his son, and straight away he asks for benedictions to leave. So why is this? Well, it's another symptom of the mode of goodness is that actually Cardinal Muni realizes he's not on that platform. Mother Yashoda, she has no material contamination whatsoever. Nanda Maharaj has no tinge of any sort of material sense. These are completely pure devotees. Simply the pleasure of Krishna is the only thought in their mind. There's no other distraction. Just like the Ganges flows to the sea, all their thoughts are about the pleasure of Krishna. And therefore their service is so exalted that Krishna allows them to perform as his father, as his mother. And he, using Yoga Maya, she covers their knowledge of who Krishna is so that they can relate to him in this way. But Kardamuni, he's not on his level. And therefore he knows that if he starts relating to Kapila Dev in parental affection, actually it will not be pure devotional service. Actually it will not be so beneficial for his spiritual life. Very interesting. Kapila Dev also knows this. And so Kapila Dev tells him, yes, you leave. You live as a mendicant. You travel around. Don't stay in one place more than 3 days. And by doing this, by showing compassion to all living entities, you will see me in everybody's heart. And this is what happens. Kapila Dev, Karamuni, he leaves. And he perfects his life. He goes back to Godhead. So it's another symptom of the mode of goodness means to realize what level we're on. We start acting like Mother Yashoda whilst we still have material desires, it's going to really screw up our spiritual life. So everyone gets a personal treatment in the spiritual life. Even I was at the doctor's yesterday with another devotee. Very good doctor, Ayurvedic doctor. So just beforehand we were discussing some of things we wanted to get advice from the doctor, and some of her symptoms are quite similar. But the advice she gave was very different, because actually the problems we had were different. this is a real doctor, did they actually address the root cause? So in spiritual life is the same. We may look like we're similar positions to other people, but actually the anarchies we have are different for everybody. And therefore Krishna, through the spiritual master, is going to give us a different process of purification. So this is sort of an overview of the life of Kardama Muni. Some points we discussed about him being situated in the mode of goodness was his, initially his honesty, I have these desires, and he engaged with them in a very healthy way. Then his mutual appreciation, how we can appreciate also the service of other Vaishnavas, this is a symptom of the mode of goodness. Thirdly, before he engaged in a big life decision, he very much did not act rashly, but assessed the entire situation, thinking of his own welfare, and also planned for how to actually move beyond that situation. And finally, he never acted beyond his level. He knew which level he was on, and he knew the process of purification by which he could perfect his life. So these are all things that if we accept them in our life, will allow us to sustain one's devotional service, because we're here to give this entire life to Prabhupada, not to give 10 years to Prabhupada. Prabhupada's got a worldwide revolution to which he's bringing about, and we get the option to be part of it. But if we're going to be part of it, we need to make sure we're still here. If we're going to be here, actually, we come to the mode of goodness. So, you just have thoughts on your perhaps any, what are any other comments, any questions you'd like to make, discuss? I think the microphone, is it dead? That's got left. It's been reincarnated.
Yeah, very good.
This, I think Mataji speak first.
I think I heard Prabhupada say that we should live with the devotees, even if it's very difficult, so rather than to live away from the devotees. So I just want to understand what it means to be too close to the devotees, because you said that we should not too much.
Yeah, we have to become entirely dependent upon the Vaishnavas. But this dependence should be on a spiritual platform, not simply dependent upon what this person makes me laugh. I'd like to be with this person. Or this person is just easy to be with. And if that's our mentality, then we'll actually neglect taking association of senior Vaishnavas, because often actually being in the association of senior Vaishnavas can be somewhat purifying. Association doesn't just mean proximity. Association means when we're taking association with senior devotees, it means to actually humbly inquire from them and to follow the instructions which they say. So we should be entirely dependent upon this sort of association, but the association I was saying we should be less dependent upon is simply, okay, these are my friends, because then there was their challenges in their spiritual life, and friendship is essential. But if our spiritual life is simply, if the basis of our spiritual life is simply friendly relations, without any actual philosophical knowledge of what we're doing, then Krishna will rock the boat. Krishna likes to rock the boat because Krishna wants to come to the platform of purity. So he will shake up our situation to make us, same with anything, if we think my spiritual life is based on being part of an organization or an institution, these things may be initially, but Krishna will shake up the boat until we get to the stage where my spiritual life is actually how much taste I have in the holy name. How much taste I have for reading Srimad Bhagavatam, how much taste I have for sharing Krishna consciousness, the real essence of spiritual life. Is that okay?
Hare Krishna, I just want to clarify if I understood correctly. So you said that the reason why Kadamuni left when Lord Kapila appeared was because he didn't feel qualified to associate with him.
From the Bhagavatam is describing that he still had more purification to undergo. But also, Yeah, when I've not heard so much about like a bit of the, but these sorts of fatherly motherly relationships perhaps are not so much appropriate in that particular incarnation of the Lord. Because as soon as he's born, actually, he's already given philosophy. Really. You know, when Krishna appears, Krishna allows his mother to, you know, he initially can't walk, and he rolls over and he learns to walk and he goes to the cow. So he allows his devotees to experience this with Savyaras. Kapiladev, he's more here for business. He says, you know, I've come to teach Sangha Yoga and to explain, you know, the difference between matter and spirit for the overall uplifting of society. So you can't really, your feelings of parental affection there are not going to be so much nourished anyways. So I think multiple reasons.
Do you see what I mean?
Because he does it and he just leaves.
Yeah, like so. Like
this is the nature of desire. Material desire isn't you. That the soul is actually on the level of anyavalasita sunya. That's the level of the soul desire and pure devotional service. And all these other material desires, these are somehow, you know, kama esha, koda esha. It's coming from, it's contact with material energy. So, but he has some tangible desire, and also he's been given the instruction to progeny. Brahma wants. So he's thinking what is there. But it's not like that desire is completely encompassing him. Because even it's described when he gets that benediction, when Swami Brahmana says, yeah, please, my daughter's here, get married. He says that if he from Karnamuni, he smiles to himself, thinking of Lord Vishnu. It's very interesting that it's like, you know, if someone just says, okay, you're going to get married to this girl, and she's the most beautiful girl in the world, you're going to start thinking of her straight away. But he's not at all on that level. It's like this small little desire, and he can also utilize it in service to his spiritual master. So he does it, and then he, you know, moves on. But he really goes for it, you know? It's like aerial mansion. You know, and even it's like he says, Lord Vishnu, you just have to, you know, make that Devahuti pregnant once. But he actually expands himself 9 times and gives her 9 daughters. So he puts some there's some energy into it as well.
Prabhupada Ariki.